Madhava Kunjabi Hari Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Bala Bhagiri Vardhari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivar Dhadi Jasod Nandana Braj Janaranjana Jasod Nandana Braj Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivar Dhadi Gopi Jana Balabha Girivar Dhadi Jasod Nandana Braj Janaranjana Jasod Nandana Braj Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Vishnu Pad Parabahamsa Parivajagacharaja Astatara Satasi Srimad Shri Prabhupad Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Premanandi Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Text 31 Canto 8 Chapter 22 Esha me prapita sthanam Dushprapam amarai api Savanir Antarasyayam Bhavitendro Mad Ashrayah Esha Me Prapita Sthanam Dushprapam Amarai Api Savar Savar Nir Antarasyayam Bhavitendro Mad Ashrayah Esha Me Prapita Sthanam Yushparapam Amarayar Api Savarnir Antarasyayam Bhavitendro Mad Ashrayah Esha Me Prapita Sthanam Yushparapam Amarayar Api Savarnir Antarasyayam Bhavitendro Mad Ashrayah Esha Me Prapita Sthanam Dushprapam Amarayar Api Savarnir Antarasyayam Ladies, please. Esha Me Prapita Sthanam Dushprapam Amarayar Api Savarnir Antarasyayam Esha Me Prapita Sthanam Dushprapam Amarayar Api Savarnir Antarasyayam Esha Me Prapita Sthanam Dushprapam Amarayar Api Esha Bali Maharaj May by me Prapitaha has achieved sthanam a place dushprapam extremely difficult to obtain amarayar api even by the demigods savairne antarasya during the period of Manu known as Savarni. I am this Bali Maharaj. Bhavita will become Indraha, the Lord of the heavenly planets. Mat Ashrayaha, completely under my protection. Translation, the Lord continued, because of his great tolerance, I have given him a place not obtainable even by the demigods. He will become king of heaven, king of the heavenly planets, during the period of Manu known as Savarni. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if the Lord takes away a devotee's material opulences, the Lord immediately offers him a position of which the demigods cannot even dream. There are many examples of this. in the history of devotional service. One of them is the opulence of Sudama Vipra. Sudama Vipra suffered severe material scarcity, but he was not disturbed and did not deviate from devotional service. Thus, he was ultimately given an exalted position by the mercy of Lord Krishna. Here the word mudashraya is very significant, because the Lord wanted to give Bali Maharaj the exalted position of Indra. The demigods might naturally have been envious of him and might have fought to disturb his position, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead assured Bali Maharaj that he would always remain under the Lord's protection. Mud Ashrayaha. So this is the Personality of Godhead speaking, and the words of the Supreme Lord and the Lord's devotee never go in vain, meaning they'll always happen. In the case of the devotee, it's because these exalted devotees, like Lord Brahma and Narada Muni and others, the Lord upholds their word, and therefore their word is like the Lord, infallible, because they're the devotees of the Lord who is infallible. But in this case, this is the Lord directly speaking, and he's indicating his reciprocation. So the previous verses were describing the severe difficulty that Bali Maharaj was put through, so that the world could see. The Lord was examining so that the world could see that he never deviates from the truth. He never deviates from his vow. He gave his word. He'll keep his word. Doesn't matter. And severe, doesn't matter. He'll keep his word. He won't go against his word. This is Bali Maharaj. Then, although I took away all his opulences, look at this. I'm going to give him opulence like anything. So this verse, then the next few verses, describe the opulence. So Hari takes away and Hari gives. Now, what he's going to give him is not just opulence. He's going to get opulence. He'll receive the Lord's protection, because when you receive opulence, look out. It can easily be that one may want to become the enjoyer of that opulence without protection. So mud ashraya, this is the emphasis that Prabhupada is giving in the purport, this part of the verse. Bhavita Indra mud ashraya. He will become the Lord of the heavenly planets completely under my protection. Completely under my protection, he's saying in the purport, indicates demigods that may covet the position of Indra themselves may make some kind of battle. Kshatriyas do things like this. Like there's many, many, many examples, kind of like standard example. When there's a Swayamvar ceremony, whoever wins the Swayamvar ceremony, especially if there's other kings present, after the king wins the hand of the princess, there's a battle. He's already won the hand of the princess, but then they battle the winner. And he has to show his valor yet again, besides whatever he did for the hand of the princess. Not always, but many, many cases. In Valmiki Ramayana, it's a detail, it does not describe what in other Ramayans, Tulsi Ramayana apparently, and others, that say when Ram lifted the bow of King Janak, or the bow of Lord Shiva in the care of King Janak, it was just solo. It was Vishwamitra there with the two brothers, Ram and Lakshman. And it's a very beautiful description. Vishwamitra asked Janak, the boys would like to see the bow. Can you bring the bow? And so on so many wheels, so many men just wheeling this heavy-duty bow into the royal palace from wherever it was kept. King Janak said, can you string the bow? So Ram looks at Vishwamitra, gives him the nod, he can pick up the bow. So he picks up the bow that others were just even unable to pick up. And so many men bring, so it's heavy bow. And then King Janak says, please string the bow. Ram looked at Vishwamitra, looking for permission. He gets the nod and the approval. So he not only strings the bow, but he breaks the bow. According to Valmiki Ramayana, there wasn't a whole string of kings in the presence of Ram. It was just a solo, because according to Valmiki Ramayana, other kings and princes had come and gone and failed and were sad. So this was a solitary event. Other Ramayans tell it differently. But like Arjuna winning the hand of Draupadi, there was a big battle. And similarly, when there's many examples like this, when Bhishma went to the kingdom to get the hand of Ambika and Ambalika, there are many other princes wishing the hand at the Swayambhar, and Bhima said, I'm taking them, and put them under his chariot, and so many soldiers pursued him and he defeated them all. So it happens in such cases. But the Lord gives his protection to his devotee is the message. So he's going to become Indra in the future. Demigods may challenge it. But Madashraya, he'll be protected from the challenge. But even bigger than military challenge is being defeated from within, where one becomes the so-called enjoyer of some material opulence. We need protection in order to become freed from that tendency. So Krishna gives his committing. Amana is giving his commitment, Madashraya. I'll give my protection for Bali when he becomes the king of heaven. Now we said yesterday he had, by prowess, by military strength, he took over the heavenly kingdom. He's being given back the heavenly kingdom later. And we're going to hear, until that later comes, he's going to have another place that's also extremely opulent, although it's in the lower planetary regions by design. We'll hear. It's extremely opulent, and the Lord gives his protection there. He commits to become the gatekeeper of Bali's kingdom while he's waiting to become the king of heaven. And there's this detail in Ramayana when Ravana was conquering the three worlds. One of the three worlds is the lower planetary region, and he went to the place where Bali was, and Vamana prevented him from entering. According to Valmiki Ramayana, he kicked him, you know, his powerful foot. Vamana, standing at the gate, kicked Ravana, and he went flying. He left. That's one place that he didn't conquer, because the place was protected by Vamana. Madashraya can happen in different ways. In this particular case, he stood at the gate and protected, but he can protect in other ways besides that way. And just a little mention of the Manu named Savarni. So Savarni Manu, in our present line of Manus, comes after Vaivasvata Manu. And it's a little Puranic detail, just to complete the message here. Savarni Manu, in our case, is one of the sons of Vivaswan. So it goes like this. Daksha, this is Daksha part two. Daksha became the son of the Prachetas, Daksha part two, and his 10,000 sons and 1,000 sons became brahmacharis. He then had so many daughters, and those so many daughters were given to different manus, excuse me, different sages for the purpose of creating population, because periodically, when there's a change of manu, there's 14 in each day of Brahma, then with each manu comes a whole administration. You know, like a change of a mayor, there's a whole heads of different departments, or the president, there's a whole different departments, and he populates with his appointments. So each manu appoints different devas, particularly mentioned in the list in the ninth canto and elsewhere. It's Indra's an important post. So of the daughters of Daksha, some were given to nine or something, were given to Kardama Muni. And Kardama Muni, one of the daughters, was Aditi. And Aditi gave birth to 10 sons. And one of the first of the 10 sons is Vivaswan, the sun god. And Vivaswan had different wives. One of the wives of the sun god, Vivaswan, was Sangya. And Sangya gave birth to Shraddhadev, another name for Shraddhadev, because Shraddhadev, as far as I can understand, Shraddhadev is the name of that Manu number seven. He's, in our case, called Vaivasvata Manu because he's the son of Vivaswan, but his other name is Shraddhadev. And Sangya and Vivaswan had two other children, well, three other children, Yamaraj and Yamuna, and then another daughter. So two sons, two daughters. Vivaswan and Sangya. Vivaswata Manu was, so he became Manu during the present reign, or during the reign of Vivaswata Manu. And the next Manu is this Manu that's mentioned here. Savarni. Savarni was the son of Vivaswan and Chaya. And she had two sons, but one of them becomes the next Manu. So Manu can live for a long time. I mean, the chronology of when these marriages and when the sons were born isn't given. It's just that Vivaswan, of course, you need the sun for the duration of the universe, right? Not just sometime later. The sun exists as long as the universe exists. There has to be the sun to have life within the universe. But how that chronology lays out, I'm not aware. I'm sure it's described somewhere. But Manu number seven was his son, and Manu number eight was also his son. But there's 14 Manus in each day of Brahma, So this is a day of Brahma. So here we're hearing Bali Maharaj. And there's some detail that's also found in Valmiki Ramayana that I'm learning because I'm going to be visiting Ayodhya. We know that this is the present Manu is Vaivasvata Manu, and Krishna's appearance is during which yuga cycle of 71 yuga cycles during the reign of Vaivasvata Manu? 28. After the 27th, yes? 27 or 28? Huh? 28. So that's 20 yuga cycle number 28 is when Krishna appears during that Dwarpa Yuga of the 28th yuga cycle. When did Ramachandra appear? During the earlier part of this 28th yuga cycle or some previous one? According to Ramayana, it's yuga cycle number 24. Now, that's Ramayana, and the chronology may differ from Srimad Bhagavatam, but that's what Ramayana says. So Ram preceded the appearance of Krishna, and according to Ramayana, in a previous yuga cycle, he appeared. So all I'm saying here is that there must be some description somewhere within the Puranas that describes Vamana's appearance, because it may be in this 28th yuga cycle and it may not. Remember when Gargamuni is giving, when Krishna appears in the prison house of Kamsa, he informs Vasudeva and Devaki, I have appeared twice before, Sutapa and Prishni, as Prishni Garba, as the son of Kardama Muni, and Aditi, as Vamana. Now I'm appearing as your son, and you are my parents, and those three, those other two. So Krishna appears before Vamana, and Vamana appears before Prishni Garba. So there's different yugas, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga. So it may very well be that Vamana appears in the 28th yuga cycle. But there's other yuga cycles, and it's not always that Krishna appears as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki and then goes to Vrindavan. There's a Vasudeva and Devaki, and Krishna stays in Mathura. All I'm saying here is the chronology of Srimad Bhagavatam, we should be aware that it's not necessarily linear. It's not necessarily, we may just assume it because we just assume so many things. It may be and it may not be in the same yuga cycle as our present yuga cycle. And sometimes the Bhagavatam says, or our commentary says, but like, for example, it does specifically, Jiva Goswami says about Varaha. There's two Varahas, and they're during different Manus, and one is Sweta Varaha, and the other is Rakta Varaha, and they're different, and they appear during different Manus. It doesn't say that they appear in all of the 14 Manus. They appear in two of the Manus. That's all that's said. And the narration of the Bhagavatam is combining the two, not differentiating between the Rakta and Sweta Varaha. Again, all that I'm saying here, I'll just sharing little pieces that as we hear, don't be confused that if later on you hear, well, wait a minute, it said something over here and it says something over there. Jiva Goswami says that Srimad Bhagavatam is not intended to be a chronological presentation. It's not linear. It's transcendental. And sometimes there's an explanation. Sometimes there's not an explanation. And if there's not an explanation, don't bother your brain about it. when you hear something over there and something over here that seems to be, wait a minute, the chronology of this doesn't work. It's not claiming. Vyasadeva doesn't claim. Da, 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 da. This is strictly linear. This is strictly in that kind of chronology I'm presenting. It's not like that. It's we're receiving from Vyas in Srimad Bhagavatam glorification of the personality of Godhead and his devotees and various lessons of how to come to the stage of pure devotion. That's what we're receiving. The path of Bhagavat Marg or Bhagavat Dharma. That's the hearing and chanting of the glories of the Lord. That's what's important. That's what's important. So all of that other pranic detail, and it could be this or that, is just to share, we should focus on the essence and not be, I mean, it's nice to know details, but it's not, it's a detail, it's not the essence. The essence, once again, is the Lord giving his protection to Bali. The previous is, he was examining Bali's unconditional, fixed position of surrendering everything at the lotus feet of the Lord. Very, very difficult test, and he passed the test. He got a 4.0. He's on the dean's list for being perfectly, perfectly successful. And so then we're hearing the Lord's reciprocation with that perfect attainment of Bali. He spoke about his violation of principles of religion, and we heard the previous verse. I was just kidding. I didn't mean it. He's a perfect follower of the principles of Dharma. Why? He didn't give that third pace of land, but he surrendered everything to the personality of Godhead and thus perfect in his Dharma. Paradharma message. And one who does like that is not left abandoned. The Lord gives his protection, and his protection is multifold. Thinking of this nice example from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Gopinath Patanayak. Now, in his case, he actually violated religious principles. He usurped the property of the king unlawfully. It was worldly dharma, and that he violated worldly codes of law. And for that matter, for Vaishnavas, we don't take the property of others. I mean, it's the Ten Commandments, but it's also just standard dharma. We recognize everything as the property of Krishna. And we, Ishavasham Idam Sarvam, we accept that which is intended for us, and we don't take other things. Now, when I was in St. Louis, I heard something that I never heard before, so I'll share it. Gargamuni Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple, book distributor from, a million years, he shared a little story that he heard that, I think he said it was Hunt, but somebody whose wealth was from oil production. And there was some discussion with Prabhupada about approaching this person who seemed to be kind in philanthropy and how to speak with him. Prabhupada said something to that effect. Prabhupada said, tell him he's a thief. You're stealing the property of God. You should give it to God. No, I don't know the whole story. That was just the part that Gargamuni shared. Prabhupada could do things like that. And we may not be able to do things like that. Another Prabhupada story I heard recently. It was a morning walk conversation. And the devotees who were speaking with Prabhupada, they had apparently just visited Dainapan. And there was a period of time when Dainapan became the printer of Back to Godhead magazine and other things. So in negotiating the printing of Back to Godhead magazine with Dainapan, they were describing, Prabhupada, how you worked out that deal was just amazing. Said, all of these powerful corporate personalities in their place, in their corporate office, you managed to negotiate with them something they had never done before. They signed a contract for printing without you giving any money. And it's just, they don't do that. They agree to print, you pay a bunch of money. They'll print, and then, you know, you pay the rest later or something else, whatever the contract. But they agreed to put all the money up front. Prabhupada, how you did that was just amazing. And then Prabhupada chuckled and said, yes. And when I heard from the president of Dainapan that he was Buddhist, I asked him if he was vegetarian, and he said no. And I chastised him and said, what kind of Buddhist are you? And then the devotee said, yes, Prabhupada, you are so bold. And every time we go back to them, they always say, how is Swamiji? He's such a nice man. Now, if we were to say something like that in somebody's office, we'd be bounced out on our ear. So we don't imitate. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. He's a very, very powerful acharya. And Krishna was giving him protection, obviously. Krishna was opening doors and giving him opportunities for serving Krishna in very, very amazing ways, and Krishna was always protecting him. Prabhupada didn't stretch it beyond sensibility, but at the same time, the relationship, intimate relationship between such a pure devotee and Krishna is there. We're not of that standard, but we should also understand protection of Krishna is there for us. We don't do things foolishly and expect Krishna is going to give us our protection, his protection. But when we're carrying out instructions and the will of Krishna, we can expect his protection. That the challenge for us is, and the message from the Bhagavatam for us is, come to that stage where we say to Krishna, I am yours, and we don't pull it back upon, you know, a difficult circumstance. Krishna, I am yours. And Krishna will help us step by step by step to come to that stage. But we keep our word, and Krishna will give us all protection. Even it may look difficult on the way. Okay, so any discussion on this? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, on that point, how do you deal with the fear of coming to that position of accepting that? Yesterday you presented the position of Bali Maharaj being tested so severely, but also given the forbearance to go through that whole test and be fully successful, that his position of faith in Krishna was fully exposed. And of course, like you presented Srila Prabhupada, we cannot imitate, we can follow the Mahayan, the principle. When we come to be tested and obviously our faith is not fully developed, You come to that position that you have to trust Krishna's giving us the forbearance, but you know that sometimes out of fear, just to deal with this test, we remain, you know, not fully trusting Krishna's position. How do we deal with that?
How do you navigate that territory? That's your question? Well, two things. The test, positive, negative. The test that we have to undergo is, this is the negative, is not as severe as what Bali Maharaj had to undergo. Say it in the positive. The tests that we are given, they're requisite, required, is the faith that Krishna will help us. And if you don't have the faith that Krishna will help you, then you're trying to cross a river with 1 foot and 2 boats. You'll end up in the river. So put both feet in one boat with the faith. So where do you summon the faith when there's fear? With trust in Krishna. And a lot of that capacity to trust in Krishna comes from how you chant the holy name every day. That's, you know, how you prepare yourself for circumstances. But then supposing you're working conscientiously, diligently in taking full shelter in the holy name with full faith that the holy name is Krishna and Krishna is giving his shelter. So you're doing a nice job with that. Then it may be, may not be, but it may be that Krishna will then ramp up the test and the challenge and the, you know, seeming thing that's leaves you in that space again, you know, just a notch up. So it rests on faith in Krishna. The whole of the process of sadhana bhakti is to bring one to the stage of bhakti is so strong, those other things cannot win. You know, the contaminations of heart, the anartas in the heart cannot prevail because bhakti is sufficiently strong. Then up to the stage of taste, attachment, spontaneous, etc. So that in response to your question is turn your attention to what is my faith in Krishna? It's being examined. I'm going to get a chance to examine it. Let me examine it. It helps to go there, because if you don't go there, you go to the problem or absorbed in the problem or the challenge or the circumstance, and you lose track of who am I, what's really important to me, what's the goal, where is my faith in the goal of life go? Same thing just said in the reverse manner. Uddhava speaking to Krishna in Uddhava Gita, Bhayam Dutiyam Dutiya Abhinivesitaksyat Ishad epetasya viparyayo smritihi, which means fear, which is what you're describing, syat, it arises when there's dutiyam abhinivesh, when there's abhinivesh, there's absorption in something that's dvitiya, a second thing other than Krishna. It's the fear arises because of attachment, absorption in something other than Krishna. What's that something that's other than Krishna? It's maya. by definition, something other than Krishna. Maya. Ishad apetasya. Apetasya means like aversion. Aversion to Isha. So it's raga and dvesha. Ishad apetasya. Viparyayo. The mind becomes spun out, bewildered. You can't discern properly. And asmritihi. You forget Krishna. So what to do? Hit the reset button. Go into a space that's not just caught up in the moment of the challenge. It can happen very quickly if you become practiced at it. Just go to a mode of goodness space and look inside and say, what's my goal of life? What's my purpose? Who am I? What's most meaningful to me? Here's a circumstance that is bewildering me because, so it's knowledge and detachment through bhakti. Gyane prayasam udapasyanamanta eva. So Lord Brahma says one should not go like that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. So it's just, you think of Krishna. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, according to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Vairagya Vijanija Bhakti Yoga. Those three things. The process of bhakti with proper discernment and detachment from other things that are unwholesome and inhibiting bhakti. You take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. You pray. And you connect. You're at his feet. You're calling. You're raising your arms. I'm being challenged. Please pick me up. Please give me the strength to address this and stay at your feet, whatever happens. So it's just, that's bhakti. So I know what the other situation is. It's how to deal with anything of life where it's, you know, it's in a place of challenge. One of the presentations that I'm going to be making at universities this semester is narcissism and how modern culture promotes narcissism, and it's especially has affected millennials. Studies and people that, you know, make their livelihood by studying sociology say it's a narcissistic generation. And why? And it, making that presentation to two universities, literally with tears in their eyes, the millennials who are in the audience say, it's true. So there's a section that says, now what to do about it? And one of the first things the experts say is just recognize the problem. Rather than, you know, knowledge and detachment. Then I can act with in a thoughtful manner rather than just be swept away by the forces that are acting on me. Like your question, the force of fear. Step back and recognize the problem. And what's it? What's the cause of the problem? Dutiya abhinivesh. I'm absorbed in something other than Krishna, which doesn't exist. What's other than Krishna? It's my lack of Krishna consciousness that's the cause of the fear. It's I said yes to Maya instead of to Krishna. That's why there's fear. And here comes a challenge to take away that absorption in something other than Krishna. Yay! Krishna, you're my protector. So it's just you go to the right place. Rather than kind of between the two places. At least the circumstance creates the opportunity. Supposing the circumstance wasn't there, then you'd stay absorbed in something other than Krishna and as a means of happiness. You'd stay bound in the cycle of birth and death and act on those things and implicate oneself further in the entanglement of Maya. Krishna is being very kind. Take shelter of Krishna. He's taking away that affinity or absorption in something other than him. And he'll give you the strength. So that's how you deal with it. If there isn't faith, you'll get beat up by the material energy. We don't like that. We don't like to suffer. But why are we suffering? Absorption in something other than Krishna, which doesn't exist. That's why I'm suffering. Krishna is being, once again, Krishna is being very kind. Just take, it takes bhakti. Intelligence directing the mind and senses rather than the reactive mode of fear because of absorption in something other than Krishna, which doesn't exist. You make choice in that moment. Which way am I going to turn? Krishna will help me. Life is filled with such things. Small, big, medium. The glory of Bali Maharaj is no fear. And for the rest of us, different degrees. So that's what to do when you enter that space. Fear arises. Something else? Yes.
Kashyapa and Aditi, one of their sons, you said, was Vivasvani.
I can't hear what you're saying.
Kashyapa.
Sangya?
Kashyapa Muni and Aditi.
Kashyapa and Aditi.
Their son was Vivasvan.
Vivasvan, yeah.
So does that mean that before that the son was not...
I don't... The presiding deity, Vivasvan, was not there. I don't have the answer to your question. Obviously the son was there from the beginning of creation. Obviously there must be, otherwise there isn't life. There's no... there's no Kashyapa and Aditi. There's no life. There must be a son. How it works chronologically, I don't know. I thought about it, I don't know the answer.
Then just in describing the yuga cycles...
And same, you know, Jamuna and Yamaraj. They're the sons of... So, wait a minute. I don't have an answer.
In The 28th yuga cycle, Krishna himself appears.
Yes.
In other yuga cycles, what is the Dwapar Yuga incarnation?
Vasudev Krishna. Vasudev Krishna.
Is it a feature?
Rakesh, four arms, no Vrindavan pastimes.
Mathura and Dwarka.
Mathura and Dwarka.
Okay.
Vasudev Krishna.
Okay. In terms of the principles of Dharma, this is, I'm just trying to understand the role of Manu, because Manu establishes, Prabhupada says, the laws of mankind. So the principles of Dharma, for example, like in the Ajamil pastime, Yamaraj and his Yamadutas know the principles of religion. Prabhupada says, Dharmantu Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam, that these are established by God. So are those principles... They're eternal, and
yes.
Are they related to what Manu's function?
Manu just gives them. They're eternal, and he gives them. He didn't make them up. He gives them.
Punishable by breaking the law of Dharma, they're going to Yamaraj, not Manu. I mean, Manu, they're accountable.
They're violating the laws of God, and there's different personalities in the whole, you know, system. Manu and Yamaraj and so forth. But they're in violation of laws of God, and he has his administration, including Manu and Yamaraj and so forth.
And one thing that's difficult for Kali Yuga creatures is, in the Bible we had something like the Ten Commandments. The Vedic version is so vast, and there's so many intricacies of Dharma that I don't even think I'm aware of all of them. So we are aspiring, you know, to follow as best as possible. But I guess in Kali Yuga, that's not our primary concern. Taking shelter of the holy name gives us the mercy to...
Well, we're certainly concerned. It's not, you know, we're not unconcerned. We want to live a dharmic life. How to get there? How to even understand what it is? Your question.
I'm wondering, when we hear about the world being replenished, the population being...
The world being what?
Replenished with population.
Replenished?
And like progenitors and species, like... Sorry.
I'm trying to understand your question. Speak clearly.
When the Manus, like... replenish the world or the universe with living entities.
Where'd you get that idea? He's the giver of law for mankind. And then there's other species of life. He's the giver of law for mankind.
You're talking about progenitors.
Progenitors or Manu?
Progenitors.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So you want to know what do the progenitors do?
I'm wondering, I've only heard of like human or demigods being...
No, read in the sixth canto. You'll find other species coming from these daughters of Daksha who are entrusted in marriage to different sages, and then species come from them. Human marrying human, from them come other species. Doesn't describe the technology.
I'll have to read.
Yeah. Yes.
If I'm correct, please correct me. To his question, Acharanistas, I think this is related to only one universe. There are millions of universes. So this sun god Akam Maharaj told, was born from Vaivasvata Manu. Manu. So that is only referred to only one universe where we are living. So similarly, millions of universes where sun god is different from this sun god.
That doesn't answer the question. Before Vivaswan was born as the son of Kashyapa and Aditi, was there a son in this universe? Or was there not a son in this universe? And if there was no son in this universe before Vivaswan was born as the son of Sangya and Kashyapa, how was there life in the universe? That's his question. Not whatever other universes are going on, just this one. Was there a son before Vivaswan was born or not? And there must have been. Well, how did it work then? I don't know. Krishna says in Brahma Samhita, speak into the microphone.
Just chakurasya Sakala Sabita Grahanam. His son is my eyes.
Okay. So there was a son. So what was ruling the son before Vivaswan was born? That's another way of asking the question. There was a son. Who was the ruler of the son before Vivaswan was born? I don't know. Same answer. There must have been a son.